we'll just talk until we get tired.
Okay.
Welcome to the show. This is your host, Mike, aka Tech. Tech is my username on CareTags. This is the CareTags podcast. That's care-tags.org. We are a community of internet fashionista nerds, is the easiest way to describe it. I've just spent the last 15 minutes explaining the internet and the blog and CareTags, really, to my guest. For today, introduce yourself, guest.
Hi, everyone out there. My name is Ranjini. I am, I don't know, creative director, writer, New Yorker.
That's she's an awesome person. Ranjini is, she works for
Condé Nast Traveler.
She used to work at Vogue, so she knows all about it. One of the coolest people I've met ever. And I'm not just saying that for the show, I really mean it. And
I think you're saying it for the show, that's fine.
And I'm glad she's here with us. Just a disclaimer, all of her opinions and all that stuff are her own. And so please don't sue us or anything like that. So we're here to have a good time. We've got a lot to talk about.
We're just here to party.
We're just here to party. I guess we're here to party? Wow, things have gotten kind of weird now at this podcast. And now we are drinking beer, which is pretty awesome. First, I think you are super interesting. And well, first of all, I always ask this of all the guests. What are you wearing today? Tell us a little bit what you're wearing today, because you look awesome.
Thank you.
And it's very inspired by what I'm wearing today, apparently.
So, for those of you who haven't met Mike before, he's, you know, I think I wouldn't call him, like, trendy, but he definitely, like, is a bold dresser. So
bold dresser, yes.
Yeah, he's a bold dresser.
Euphemistic way of saying it.
He's a bold dresser with like a style all his own that like he really he's not afraid. Let's put it that way. Mm. And one day, maybe a couple months ago, we met for brunch and he had on these really cool sneakers. And so I asked him about his sneakers.
Hold up, those are my Rick Owens sneakers. All the people on Carrot Tags know what I'm talking about. Rick Owens,
yep, big up Rick Owens. So he told me about them, whatever. And there is a shop out in Seattle called Todo Cayo. I don't know if anyone out there has heard of it. It's a Native American word, so it's not spelled like it sounds. It's Totokaelo. So it's an actual like brick and mortar store out in Seattle, but they have an online shop, and my sister's actually the one who turned me on to it. But they sold these sneakers, by women's sneakers, by a brand called Common Projects.
Common Projects, yep.
Yep, so Common Projects is a men's brand, but they did a limited edition women's sneaker, which that night, when I went home and looked at the Todo Cayo site, they don't look like Mike's Rick Owens sneakers, but they're kind of like a similar vibe. Yeah. They're like a black leather sneaker with like a thick white sole. And I was like, I need some kind of an update. I need some kind of inspiration. So I ended up buying the sneakers. I emailed Mike about it to tell him, and he was very approving.
Yep.
So today's outfit, I've been wearing these sneakers, I have to say, now for a week straight. I broke up with my boyfriend last week. I don't know if that has anything to do with it.
That's the point of the show. We're going to talk all about that. No, I'm just kidding. But go ahead.
So I'm kind of on like this like cool sneaker, like I don't give a fuck kick. I work in like a corporate place. So I'm wearing my black sneakers. I'm wearing black pants. They're like these black kind of like slim pants, and they have this like, I don't know how to just, how'd you describe this, Mike? They're like a lace panel. Like they have this kind of like double texture, like black lace panel over them, but they're really cool. They're not trashy. By a brand called ALC. I'm wearing a Comme des Garçons black blazer. It's got coattails. It's shorter in the front. It's got tails in the back. And then I'm wearing like a two-tone chambray shirt by J. Crew, and a vintage Bakelite heart pin, and my Cutler & Gross glasses. So
maybe I'll take a picture of you later so people
can I'm kind of like a head to toe. I'm kind of like girl version of Mike right now in my like
very
all black with my like black sneakers. So anyway, that's the long story of my outfit.
I think you look great, and
but it was inspired because I knew I was going to see Mike today, so this was inspired by Mike.
That warms my heart more than you know. It's funny you say you work at a corporate place because I think you work at a really cool place. So you were used to work at Vogue.
I used to work at Vogue, yes.
And you work at Condé Nast Traveler.
Condé Nast Traveler, yes.
And tell us a little bit about what you do there and sort of your career trajectory, because I think a lot of people would be interested to know, you know, how you get into that kind of creative field.
So I have to say I'll start by saying, and I won't make this very long, but I will start by saying I've been super lucky because, I just think I've had the opportunity to meet some really great people, just as Mike met me in my time in New York City. I've lived here for about 15 years. And I think that, you know, when I first moved to the city in the late 90s, I just, you know, I kind of met really great DJs and artists and photographers and curators and producers and just like people who were doing all kinds of shit and like making things happen. So it was really easy for me to just kind of get tapped into the things I was interested in. I'm from Washington, D.C., where there's not a huge fashion scene.
Yep.
I love music too. There's a great music scene in D.C., but I feel like D.C. kind of lacked that like big cosmopolitan vibe that I love so much about New York. And I'm also a huge hip-hop fan, which is another one of the reasons I always wanted to move to New York. So I feel like when I moved here in the late 90s, it was just this great moment where, you know, there was hip-hop and like there was the internet and like there was just all this cool stuff going on and people were, I don't know, just there wasn't as much, there weren't as many voices out there, kind of like reporting on things and talking about things. So I think that people still kind of had their own point of view about what they were doing, and they were doing it in a very organic way. So I used to go to a lot of parties, and I kind of had a great time like the first few years I lived here. And I always wanted to be a writer. So, you know, after a little while of living here, I started freelance writing for a few like kind of downtown like niche magazines. I was writing for The Fader. I did some writing for V. I was writing for Time Out New York.
And what did you cover for them?
I wrote about fashion designers.
Okay, cool.
I wrote about not well known ones. More like just kind of like upstarts. I mean, we're talking like circa 2003, 2004.
Sure.
So this is like before like people were brands, before they were even out of the gate.
Right, right, right.
You know, like I feel like now the internet like just kind of like gives people such a presence and people are so tuned into it. It wasn't like that back then. So people actually still looked at these like
which is so crazy
print
to me
publications.
Because, yeah, it's so crazy because like I remember 2003, you know, like I just graduated college and all that stuff. So you know, it's funny because it's only been 10 years,
yeah.
And yet at the same time, that you're making it sound like the Gutenberg Bible.
It's true.
Like it was totally different.
It was so different. I mean, I didn't even get a cell phone for like the first 4 years that I lived here.
Right.
I was like going out at night without my cell phone, if you can imagine that.
And calling people on payphones.
Yeah, like, calling people are like, yeah, like just kind of like
contracting herpes through
running,
the phone.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's awesome.
Just like running into whoever I ran into
yeah.
And like just doing whatever. I mean, I think it's like, I'm not going to say like New York is so different. I think it's different, but I think people still go out and party and do the same stuff that they used to. But there was like, you know, yeah, there was like less connectivity back then and like less like looking at your phone all the time. So I think that people were just a little bit more, I don't know, just more relaxed.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I was writing for these magazines, and so the designers I was writing about were kind of like, you know, anyone from like the textile maker in Brooklyn to like a woman who made her own jewelry on the corner in Soho to, you know, this couple out in San Francisco who like, you know, created like wearable instruments. Like I used to write about all kinds of random stuff for The Fader, and I contributed for a little while to a magazine called Soma, too, out in San Francisco.
Yeah, Soma, yeah.
Yeah, so I used to write for them as well. And sometime, oh, and then I also had the good fortune to write a book.
Yes,
I wrote a book about shopping in New York City, which actually wasn't as much about shopping in New York City as it was about sort of like small, like artists and small shopkeepers who sort of like were just like had small businesses in different neighborhoods throughout the city.
You can go ahead and plug it. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's called the New York Book of Shops. It came out in two editions. The last edition came out a while ago, so I don't even know if you'll be able to still get it. It came
you
out in 2008.
Can. It's on Amazon.
Yeah. But it's a really cool little book because it was kind of my like ode to New York City at that time.
Yep.
Like just kind of like who was doing cool shit in like different neighborhoods. And you know, when I interviewed all these different shopkeepers and stuff, they were just like, you know, they were like industrial designers who decided to open a store. They were like architects who decided to open a store. Like it was like back then, it's like that's kind of like what people did. Like they sort of had retail as sort of like an extension of their creative pursuit.
Got it.
Like they didn't have like a full-on business plan like going into it.
Right.
And I think that people kind of like, I don't know, I think that people appreciated that back then. But I will tell you, a lot of the shops in my book are probably not open anymore.
Right.
Funny enough, I wrote about an opening ceremony back in 2004
That was like when they first started.
Awesome. When they first had this concept store down on Howard Street, and you know, like they had this like concept of the Olympic Games, and you know, they were going to have like collections from different countries, like every rotating collection from different countries. And it's just kind of shocking, like how I mean, I think it's great for them, how huge they've become, but like literally, like opening ceremony was in my book of small shops.
That's awesome.
So it was like, it's just kind of goes to show you, like, you know, how New York is just such an incubator for talent. And it's also a story about how, I don't know, just kind of like who you know helps you out, I guess, in some ways. Anyway, so I guess I'm going on longer than I planned to, but eventually I took a class in copywriting and advertising copywriting, and then I kind of like pursued that path. I kind of left editorial and I started working more on copywriting, which actually has been a great career trajectory for me because I think a lot of brands and companies and media outlets and whoever, like, people are looking for content. They're looking for editorialized content to tell the story of their brand. So it's not so different from what I was doing as an editorial writer. I mean, I think obviously editorial writing, like pure editorial writing, is journalism and that's different. But I think as far as like being able to make a living, I think my editorial background has kind of helped me a lot with like just thinking of like concepts and advertising and like what's kind of relevant to people right now. And at Vogue, I was kind of bringing a lot of that to the work I was doing there as far as like creating special sections in the magazine for advertisers that kind of like, you know, flowed seamlessly with the editorial content. And at Traveler, we're doing the same thing. We're kind of like, you know, just sort of telling the story of travel like through the lens of all these different brands. So it's been really great. And now I'm more of a creative director than a writer. But as Mike and I were just talking about before we started recording, it's like as a creative director, as a creative director just kind of encompasses writing and inspiration and visual like feeling and everything. It's like it's not just one thing. And I think just kind of like honing the different ways you can like tell a narrative.
Yeah. I love that your career sort of spans. It started like around 2003, on to now, and in many ways it sort of parallels the way that the relationship that digital and print have had in the last 10 years or so, right? Like in 2003, of course, people were already starting to talk about, you know, is print going to be in danger? And I think in a lot of ways, print has sort of surprised a lot of people because print is hanging in there, you know?
Yeah, I think that print is a little bit more powerful than people think it is.
Absolutely.
Because in print, you can really create that image that sticks in people's minds. I think that that's actually one thing that the internet is... I mean, I think there are sites that do it really well. I mean, I love Nowness. I love sites that have, like, you know, beautiful image content. But, yeah, I think that print definitely, like, has that hold over people, especially people who are interested in fashion.
Yeah. So, in what ways have you seen the industry change? What are the biggest aspects, you think, from, you know, 2003, when you were doing journalism, writing a book, like, and the way that fashion is sort of discussed now. I mean, do you think now, if you were to start off, you know, how would you go? Would you start writing a blog, or what would you, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that, I actually think blogs are, just on like a very personal individual level, I think that blogs are great, for writers, are a great tool and a great way to sort of establish your point of view and your voice. If you're like trying to get famous, I guess that that's also
right.
a good way to do it. But I think that...
Did you want to get famous when you got into this game?
I think that people who are creative people and move to New York, they always want to be famous.
Yeah.
I think now I'm like, I'm not 40 yet. I'm in my late 30s. And, you know, I think that idea has kind of, like, simmered down a little bit, just considering, like, where I am in my career and stuff. But, yeah, I think that when you're young and in New York, you want to make your mark.
Right.
You want to figure out what your mark is and then make it, you know? So, but to answer your original question about the way that people talk about fashion, yeah, I think it's really different. I think that the authority has shifted, obviously. I mean, it's not so much in these like publications or these websites, it's like with people. You know what I mean? Like, I think people and their friends and like the people they know in their circle are the authority. So I think in that sense it's shifted a lot. And I think that just being on the advertising side of things, I think that a lot of brands are struggling to keep up with that.
Right.
You know, or like some aren't struggling and then many are. So, you know, I think that I'm just lucky because I've just had the opportunity to be able to help people tell their story, whether it's through editorial or through advertising. And it's always really fun. It never gets boring. It's always a new challenge.
Yeah. Are there blogs that you particularly follow and you think are sort of leading the way in a lot of this?
You know, it's funny. I don't read a ton of blogs. I hate to say that. I love, I'm just going to plug actually my friend's company, The Business of Fashion.
Yes, of course. Yeah, Business.
Yeah, my friend, a good friend of mine is the managing editor there. And I actually think they do a really great job.
Well, they're very like their moniker, you know?
Yeah.
It's very industry, very informative.
It's very, but it's also, I feel like it's also informative from a creative perspective too, because it shows you kind of like, who's doing what? Like who are the people who are kind of like just doing things differently? And I think that, you know, that's kind of probably the perspective that a lot of blogs lack.
Yep.
I think there's a lot of blogs that are like other blogs out there. Like
power
there's
blogs?
Say again?
Would you say power?
No, they're like there's a lot of blogs that are like they're all the same.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Kind
they're
of like the look at me, I'm a beautiful young skinny woman.
Yeah.
I'm going to the beach.
And I think there's been a backlash to that and like fashion and the fashion and style community, but you know, I think there's just a backlash to that in general. I think that people are just kind of like, who are these like fake ass people like posing with stuff that they've been given? Like, what's real? What's authentic?
Right.
What does it mean? And you know, I think originally Mike had asked me, or he had mentioned that he wanted us to talk about normcore.
Yeah, we did talk about that.
So just to like quickly touch on that, because by no means am I an expert on it, but I do think that whatever you may think about it, I do think that is a backlash to that sort of inauthenticity.
Right, where everything's too pretty, too
beautiful. In fashion reporting.
Yeah.
And like, you know, even at Vogue, I will say like, they're really kind of like grasping at the straws of that. Like they're trying to like figure out what the implications of something like normcore is in fashion. Like that people may not actually care about making this big designer statement. Like
right.
What does that really mean?
Right.
You know, like.
I think even when you use the word fashion journalism, I almost feel that's like an oxymoron because there's not a lot out there where you can trust exactly what you see. I mean, we're in the age of Instagram, and who is that poor woman who just killed herself? The designer who was dating Mick Jagger.
Oh, yes, Loren Scott.
Right, and you know, it came out that she is actually she was in crazy debt. And she, you know, her business was in trouble, and all these things. And there's a lot of people, a lot of designers who, but from looking at her Instagram or from following her on the news, it seemed like she was living this amazing life and doing all these great things. But I mean, come on, people who work in fashion generally don't have a lot of money, except for a few superstars. But you have to kind of put yourself out there as
I'm living this jet-setting life.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, not to poo-poo my own accomplishments, but I do think I, like, kind of made the turn to working in advertising and marketing because, yeah, a true creative pursuit is, like, fashion design is very...
Right.
It's tough, you know? Yeah. It's, like, it's really tough. So, yeah, that's a very sad story.
It is a very sad story. Sorry to make it sad, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I know that there's a lot in fashion that's not, I don't know, it's definitely what Mike is saying. It's like, what you see is not what you get. Like,
right.
it's you know, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors going on. And that's what people want, you know what
right,
I mean?
Of course. Like, I think there's the fantasy aspect to it that you sort of sell yourself into it.
And, definitely.
I mean, are there any crazy fashion stories you have from way back in 2005? Woo, far away.
Man,
but before there was 4G and the iPhone.
God, I can't, you know, I have to say, like, things were done, like, pretty, I mean, it's from, like, a magazine editorial standpoint, I feel like things were done very in a similar way. I hate to say it. Yeah, it's like you contact PR, you get what you need for a shoot. Like, it's kind of the same. I think it's maybe just the speed with which people, like, learn about new designers, maybe that's what's changed.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of when I was doing, like, fashion editorial writing, that's kind of what was different.
Yeah.
There wasn't as much access. Like, someone who read a magazine didn't already know about everything that was in it. You know, I think that's the big difference.
Do you think brands are doing a good job of kind of glomming on to this new media? So I don't really see a lot of really good brands, you know, like really designer brands having an awesome Twitter, you know? Like, I don't, you know, and I think in many ways it's sort of indicative of how the industry is because, you know, people are understaffed. Like, who has time to manage a Facebook page when, or you know, do whatever creative thing when you've got to, like, come out with 3 shows a year or whatever it is?
I know. It is really crazy. I feel like the industry has definitely gotten harder.
Yes.
Yeah, in that way, especially for the creative people. I think that people, like, say that brands are doing well with like, online. Like, I think they say Burberry does it really well. There was Oscar de la Renta's, like, PR girl. People thought that was genius. I mean, but it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's all kind of like everyone just talking to each other. It's not really, I mean, the insularity of the fashion community is, like, just kind of perpetuated by those things, I think. And, again, going back to the normcore thing, I feel like I'm kind of, like, championing normcore in a weird way, which I never thought I would
do.
Yeah,
which I don't know how people are going to react, because, like, it's such a visceral reaction right now to normcore.
It's weird. I think, okay, so just to take a step back, I think normcore as, like, a label and as, like, a, like, sort of, like, a posturing statement is lame.
Yeah.
I think the sentiment behind normcore,
sure,
which is that, like, this craving authenticity thing,
yeah,
I think that's legitimate.
Right.
You know, and I kind of, like, feel that way myself.
Right.
So that part of it I can get with. But, the like, I'm dressed like a Midwestern tourist, and that's, like, you know, unobtrusive angle of it, I don't really understand. Because you're still a hipster. Like,
right.
Just, you know, you're trying to do something. So that makes you a hipster. Sorry.
Yeah. So are there any other blogs then that you particularly like, or, you know, other publications or media things that you think are kind of making a difference? Like, we've talked before
there's a really beautiful magazine journal called Serial that I've seen recently. Have you seen that?
Is it a print one or not print?
Print.
Okay.
It's print. I think, like, yeah, they're kind of cool. I think they're quarterly.
Yeah.
I love Monocle.
Monocle's amazing.
Monocle's, like, if I could own a media company, I would want it to be like Monocle.
Right. Everything,
like,
is just so...
It's really well done. It's so smart. It's so interesting. It's not insular. You know, it's like, it's not just talking about one thing or the other. It's so British, right, at the end of the day.
British,
it's,
yeah,
like...
They've got a radio show, and
fucking
they've got...
British people.
Fucking Brits with their conquering
things. Speaking of Brits, like, American Vogue is run entirely by British people.
Really?
Just for those of you out there who didn't know that, the 89% of the editorial staff is British.
How do you think that affects the
publication? I think that they... It kind of gives you that, like, meta American thing that they're doing all the time. Like, we're doing what we think is American.
Yeah.
Like, it has this kind of, like, we're looking at it from the outside feeling.
Okay.
Like, I feel like putting Kim Kardashian and Kanye on the cover recently was evidence of that.
Oh, I see.
They're just like, oh, yeah, this is what's happening. This is what we got to do,
I guess. You Americans,
like, hint. This is what the Americans do. We might not think it, like, you know, I have to kind of center myself here, but I did hear that Kim was not beloved by the publication.
Really?
And then, you know, like, I feel like that.
Which is so weird,
like,
because people seem to love her. Not.
Yeah, she was not beloved, and then I think that that sort of, like, British, we do what's American filter kicked in.
Got it.
And they were like, oh, we gotta do this now. Like, it just kind of switched. But
got it.
Anyway, not that I know anything about that, so...
What about other... let's just go back to print then. What other print publications do you think are really cool?
Let's see. I don't know. I would have to get... I don't actually buy a lot of print publications.
Yeah.
I read Traveler, I read The New Yorker. I'm like a Condé Nast girl. I read Vogue, Traveler, The New Yorker.
Right. Well, Condé Nast is the... they're pretty big. They've got their hands in a lot of stuff. You know, to your point about the authenticity thing, I think people still are attracted to people who have viewpoints.
Definitely.
You know?
Definitely.
And I think
that's what all brands are trying to tap into, or have someone be that voice for them.
Right. Someone who, you know, I mean, you know, with Kanye, he's the extreme example. He's got a viewpoint. He doesn't give a crap what anyone else thinks.
Right.
But that's what makes him so, you know, provocative. You get drawn to him even if you hate him.
Yeah, he's very entertaining.
Yeah, oh, he's really entertaining.
He's very entertaining. And there aren't many people out there like that.
Do you read any forums? Any forums like Caratags, caratags.org?
Well, I definitely read caratags.org. But besides that, I can't really think of any.
So, maybe this is news for a lot of people, but internet forum folks... We spend a lot of time talking about brands. And
oh, wait, hold on. Yeah. I got a throwback thing for you.
Okay, go ahead.
Were you ever on, you were like a baby when this happened, but were you ever on like Rack Music Hip Hop?
Rack Music Hip Hop.
Like, this was like back in like 1998, 1999.
I was like a baby in 1998.
Yeah, it was a news group.
Oh, a news group. Okay, that's old school.
Yeah.
That's some like Tron shit. That's like where, like, if you hit print, everything
okay,
is, like, perforated.
So, you all heard I was in my late 30s, so I've kind of seen it all.
Yeah.
But yes, when I was in college, I did kind of geek out on a news group.
What?
No images. Basically, it's like a chat room about music.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. But, I mean, that's earlier we were talking about how the more things change, the more things stay the same, because chat is still very big on the internet.
It is. I mean, I guess, you know what, let me take it back. It's not a chat room, it's kind of like, what do they call it? It's like there are threads, and you could like respond
yeah,
to the
right,
threads.
Right, no, that's what forums are, right?
Yeah.
There's forums, and you know, you do things. And, I mean, that concept, even Caratags itself is a forum that... It's a method of communication that hasn't changed since using
that's right.
Usenet.
That's yeah. right, yeah.
But, you guys talked about music a lot, right?
We talked about, yeah, it was like you could talk to some other college student in Ohio about, you know, the Beatnuts or like whatever. You
and
know, like,
do you think the Usenet ever affected the industry at large? Because we often on forums wonder if all this talk we have on our little chat board, on our little image board or message board, is having any impact at all.
So
because,
I,
like, we spend a lot of money and time thinking about that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think the problem now is like, the internet, the kind of, like, www has gotten so, like, sophisticated as far as just its aesthetic presentation.
Sure.
You know, when Usenet had no aesthetics, it was text on a screen.
Right.
You know, so like you really read it and you heard people's voices through their words.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like nowadays it's like if you don't attach an image to something, even on the internet, people don't care.
Right.
You know, like, or people don't listen as closely. Maybe.
Right.
But you know, that being said, I know there are like hundreds of thousands of people out there who post comments on articles and posts and whatever every single day, and they totally read all of those threads. And I think that companies care about that stuff too. I think that, you know, if you wrote about Dan and yogurt, they're going to read it.
Yeah.
So there's that. But yeah, I don't know, Mike. I think you should like keep fighting the good fight. I think there are people out there especially people who are really nerdy about something.
Yeah.
They're going to read about it.
I think that's good. And everyone out on the internet world, go ahead and keep trolling the internet, because people will one day read it. I think that's what's important.
I think they are. I mean, you know, like I could be writing an article about, you know, fashion media, and like I could just come across this podcast.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you should, because it's awesome. last thing, I think a lot of the audience would like to hear, you know, if I'm a young writer or I'm trying to get into this creative field, and you know, what should I do? I just graduated from college. What are some things that you would recommend to someone who just graduated?
So not to bring it back to myself again, but just really quick, when I graduated from college, Bill Clinton was president.
Yeah.
And everyone got a job.
That was part of his thing. Everyone got a job and a blowjob.
Me and all of my college grad little buddies, we all had jobs. And I know that that's not the case now, because, you know, I've worked with a lot of young people.
Thanks, Obama.
In the last few years, and I know that it's really tough. I've worked with people in their 20s. I've worked with people who are like 19 all the way to people in their late 20s who are doing internships. And I know it's really hard. So I guess to answer Mike's question, I would say, if you're a creative person, if you're a writer, if you're a photographer, if you're a designer, like, I would say just cultivate your own point of view. I would say whether that's having your own podcast or writing your own blog or, you know, just having a hobby. Like, because I think that what's missing right now with so many young people that I meet in the professional world is that they just want to, like, they just want to fit in.
Sure.
Like, they just want to, like, do what's expected of them, and they want to fit in, and they're afraid to rock the boat because it's so hard to get a job. And I think that just looking at it, like, as a creative director, it's like, what we look for are new ideas.
Right.
And you don't have new ideas if you're just doing what everyone in the fashion media and advertising world is doing.
Yeah.
And the only way that you're going to cultivate those new ideas is by, you know, developing your own voice and like having your own point of view on the world through whatever like medium it is that you're interested in. So, you know, even for me, in my stage, you know, I'm like taking French classes, and I'm like, you know, taking photography classes, and I'm doing stuff like this podcast, because I feel like there's always things to learn, and like, you never know it all as a creative person, and you can always be better. So, you know, you should never go into a job thinking you know everything, which I'm sure none of you would do just out of college anyway. But,
oh, you'd be surprised. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but I think the most important thing is to just have something like outside of work while you're looking for a job that kind of like keeps you motivated intellectually and creatively, and you know, just sort of like keep that going, like whether or not you have like a job as a receptionist or a job as an assistant or whatever it is, like just sort of like stay tapped into the things that you really care about.
Last thing, we always play this game on the forum, I'm sorry, on the podcast, and it's called Buy, Burn, or Steal. It's like Fuck, Kiss, or Marry, but with things. So I give you three items,
okay,
and you have to tell me, would you buy it, burn it, or steal it? Buy it means, you know, you would go out of your way and buy it with your own money. Burn it means you don't want to get rid of it. Or steal means it's cool, but you want kind of, you know, you wouldn't want to pay money for it.
Okay.
So we're doing publications, so we'll do publications. So which one would you buy, burn, or steal?
Steal.
Okay. No, hold on. I list you three things, and you got to tell me.
Oh.
You don't have to say it again. So, a copy of your own book, Shops of New York.
Buy.
Hold on, you haven't heard all three of the things yet.
No.
You got to listen to all three things. A copy of the latest Vogue with Kim and Kanye on there. The Bible.
So those two things, or what
those
are
three
the
things? Those so, three things. So it's a copy of your own book.
Okay.
The latest edition of Kim and Kanye on Vogue. A copy of the Bible.
So I would definitely buy my own book. I hate to say it, but I would burn the Vogue. In fact, it's been sitting on my coffee table, and I'm probably just going to throw it out, because I actually can't even open it. I'm sorry. For all my friends who work at Vogue, I do love Vogue, but that one issue in particular I can't really deal with. And the Bible, I'd probably steal it.
All right.
Yeah, I think the Bible is, I would read it.
Yeah.
You know, like I think I would stand to gain something from reading the Bible. So
yeah, it's stood the test of time, and there's some compelling characters there.
I would steal it.
A little bit of a deus ex machina at the end, but it's good.
I think it's great.
It's good. All right, well, I want to thank Ranjini for joining us.
Thank you guys for listening to all the long-winded details of my life.
It's been great. We're going to go get some drinks. And just contemplate what's going to happen with our careers. Thanks for listening. If you are interested, you can find us on iTunes. You probably already found us on iTunes. Check us out, care-tags.org. And we'll see you online and on the next podcast. Thanks.